Welcome back. And to wrap up this sacred month of October, I have another true ghost story from Lauren Rhodes. Now, the truth is, I love a good ghost story, so we don't have to stop just because October is over. If you have a good ghost story, keep sending it to me, and I'll put it on the air. Thanks, everybody. Happy Halloween.
This is called The Ghost of Friends by Lauren Rhodes. Blair was a difficult man. I don't know what had wounded him, but the damage was deep and ultimately fatal. I wonder, if he'd lived, if we could have ever gotten close enough to discuss it. Blair's sugar daddy was a psych nurse at the Crestwood Institute, which sounds like a boys' school, but was actually a mental hospital. Newell put Blair through nursing school at UC Santa Cruz, got him a job at Crestwood. I don't know if Blair studied psychology because that's what his patron did, or as a path toward fixing himself. By the time I met him, Blair used psychology as a method of control. I was afraid of him. Not actively, and not always, but I'd suffered my own damage, and it was hard enough for me to trust normal men. Blair was the sort of man who'd screw the person your best friend had a crush on, tell you about it in excruciating detail, and then swear you to silence about it. He was testing me, I finally decided, to see if I could keep a secret, if I'd lie to my best friend. Once I realized that Blair was trying to set the conditions of a maze, starring Lauren the Mouse, I withdrew. I might have stayed withdrawn, except when you adopt your friends as brothers, their spouses become family too. Blair married into my chosen family. My best friend Jeff loved him, really loved him, and I owed it to Jeff to accept Blair as part of the tribe. They hadn't been official domestic partners for 2 years when Blair tested positive for AIDS. His illness took a steep downhill course. In December, he went on disability from his job at San Francisco General's Emergency Psych Ward. The following April, his liver stopped working. I was in the house when Blair finally passed, but I wouldn't go look at his body. I didn't want to give him the opportunity to get me. Instead, I went into the backyard and watched his corpse through the patio doors. He looked harmless then, mouth gaping open and limbs sprawled across the bed. He weighed maybe 60 pounds, only bones beneath his sallow, leathery skin. I went back into the house, put on dead can dance, and lit some cedar incense. "Farewell, Blair," I prayed. "I hope you find peace." He was 29. One of the luxuries Jeff and Blair had allowed themselves was a housekeeper. Jeff used a cleaning service that employed Latinas. He'd been very happy with these women, but he lost his regular housekeeper when he asked her to stop coming during Blair's last illness. After Blair's death, he had a series of women who came once and refused to return. Exasperated, Jeff called the maid service and demanded an explanation. "They think your house is haunted," he was told. Lupe said she heard voices. Someone kept calling her name. Jeff found it hard to believe Blair would trouble himself with harassing housekeepers, but the problem remained. Eventually, he turned to me. I needed the money to keep me from temp secretarial work. I even liked doing housework, since I feel like it's sort of standing meditation. We agreed to try the arrangement. Nothing about it weirded me out until I was alone in the house the first time. I put on an Oingo Boingo CD and turned it up loud. If Blair was going to call my name, I didn't want to hear it. The night before Thanksgiving, I slept over at Jeff's. The next day would be his first time to host dinner without Blair's help. I was there as sous chef and bus girl and co-hostess. I was flattered to be asked. Jeff and I had just finished smoking a finger-sized joint when I saw Blair's ghost the first time. I was sitting on the sofa in the living room. A black figure sat hunched at the dining room table. When I turned my head to figure out what was causing the shadow, it evaporated, leaving behind the brightly lit skeleton in the painting behind the table. It wasn't scary or threatening, really. The ghost seemed sort of sad, unable to come into the room where people were and join in the conversation. I opened my mouth to say something to Jeff, then stopped. He had to live here. I didn't want to tell him that his lover really was haunting their house. I sat back on the sofa and gazed into the dining room. In the Tim Cummings painting, the skeleton bends slightly forward over the bloody wrist of Vishnu. It seems to have gnawed off his hand. The skeleton in the painting and the shadow were both hunched forward at the same angle. One was dark and impenetrable, three-dimensional, the other bright white against the scarlet background. Just a flat figure in a painting. The skeleton had been Blair's totem in the last year of his life. Jeff and I hung out for a while, talking of nothing in particular. Long before I sobered up, he stretched and said, "I'm going to bed. You can sit up and listen to music if you like. Not likely, I thought. Aloud, I answered, I think I'll go to bed and read. The adrenaline level in my blood hadn't dropped off much. Sleep seemed very far away. I got up that night, as I always do, to wander around. As I stepped into the bathroom, I saw a shadow move in the living room. It stood between me and the folding screen in front of the window. I knew at once that it was Blair, even though it was less distinct in the darkened room than the figure had been in the dining room earlier. I didn't want to engage him in conversation. I didn't want to know what his purpose was. I didn't want to know why he was showing himself to me. I was tempted to tell him that he was dead and shouldn't be here, but it wasn't my home, and he wasn't threatening anyone. I was afraid of him, but I'd been afraid of him in life. He was, I decided, less capable of hurting me now than he ever had been. I left the bathroom door open a crack so he could come up and talk if he wanted to. When he didn't, I announced, I'm going back to bed. Leave me alone tonight. No one answered. I closed the bedroom door tightly behind me. In the morning, I was making coffee when Jeff strolled out of his room. I debated what I should say. When my hands were busy filling the pot in the sink, I said, I saw Blair's ghost last night. I haven't seen him, Jeff said, but I've been pretty sure he was here. I don't know what I expected to hear, but that wasn't it. Jeff is very down to earth, feet on the ground. If he could sense the ghost, then surely something must be there. He told me his story. One morning I was laying in bed in that half-awake state, thinking about the ghost. I felt a blast of wind blow straight up the length of my body into my face. When I opened my eyes, there was nothing to be seen, and nowhere for the wind to have come from. I shivered. Jeff slept in the bed where Blair had suffered and died. It was all I could do to make myself sit on the bed when we watched a movie. Did he speak to you? Jeff asked. No. I wonder what he wants. It could all be shrugged off as the power of suggestion on susceptible minds. I was very high and then sleepy. Jeff was half awake. But it makes sense to me that if you don't have a corporeal body to affect real space, you have to work in those times and spaces when people will be most likely to sense you. Or maybe he's there all the time, and we're only able to perceive him when we've lowered our resistance. The last time I saw Blair's ghost, he was full color. He wore a red flannel shirt over black jeans. His hands were linked behind his head as he lounged on the bed, ankles crossed. His black hair had grown out to the velvet stage. He looked healthier than he had in the entire last year of his life. His dark eyes sparkled at me as he grinned. Gotcha. Immediately turned back to the stereo. It was Monday. Blair had died on a Monday. He died in the afternoon, in this room, on that same side of the bed. All that flashed through my mind, followed by a rush of fear. I did not want to have my back turned on Blair's ghost. I whirled around so fast that I stumbled against the bookshelf and had to reach out to steady myself on the foot of the bed. The bed was empty again. Blair was gone. I reached the incense down from the bookshelf and lit a stick of Blair's favorite sandalwood. I waved the smoke over the bed and myself before leaving it to burn on the bedside table. Be at peace, I wished him, but I had the sense he was.